Calling all lovers of mystery and fans of a good story. If you haven't already heard me talk about June's journey, you're in for a treat. It's time to don your detective hat in this free hidden object mobile game that delves into the captivating journey of June Parker, a self-proclaimed detective on a quest to unravel the mystery surrounding her sister's untimely death. In June's journey, you get to play as June, deciphering clues and unveiling secret plots within thousands of beautifully illustrated scenes. And did I mention it's set in the glitzy 1920s? New chapters are added weekly, so you will never run out of new thrills to uncover, and you can also personalize and decorate your very own Orchid Island where the story takes place. How sharp are your detective skills? Find out when you download June's Journey on your Android or iOS device, or play online via Facebook Games. Your detective journey awaits.
Contained herein are the heresies of Radolf Buntwine, erstwhile monk-turned-traveling medical investigator. Join me as I uncover the blasphemous truth of a plague-ridden world, that ours is not a loving God, and we are not its favored children. The Heresies of Radolf Buntwine, coming January 2nd, wherever podcasts are available.
Welcome back to Angel on Top. Just a few announcements before we get into this week's episode, Untouched.
Well, Halloween has passed, but what a time it was.
Indeed. I feel like we both went pretty hard this year.
I did three costumes.
Same.
Laura, three.
Same.
And one of the costumes was Buffy and Faith that I did with my girlfriend when we went to a live stage performance of Once More with Feeling, which was maybe one of the more chaotic stage performances I've ever seen, where Buffy didn't know her first line and screamed, "Line!"
It's always a good sign when line is the first line of the show.
Where Spike had a sword for no reason, where the actors who played Willow and Tara accidentally swapped roles halfway through.
That's just what lesbian sex is.
Yeah, like when Willow discovers the little flower in the spell book and is like, "Willow, how could you?" I was like, "You're Willow. Do not understand."
All the actual Buffy stans in the audience were just like fuming.
I was losing my mind. And
how much was this concert, by the way?
I paid $100. And then one of the good parts was that Dawn was played by a puppet, like by a Cabbage Patch puppet. And people just like took turns being the ventriloquist of Dawn, which was pretty fun. Ooh, and the demon was played by this like incredible woman. She was the saving grace.
At least that.
But speaking of cosplaying as Buffy and or Angel, we've got our winners for the giveaway.
Wee wee wee
wee wee. In second place, who really took some advice from us and decided to go the
narcissistic way.
The fun route of being Charisma Carpenter, an outgoing carpenter, is James from Michigan, Kindle James 4.
Congrats to you, James.
James will be winning our new Rogue Demon Hunter pocket tee, as well as a surprise Halloween poster from the gals over at Buffering the Vampire Slayer. And how about you tell us about the number one winner, Laura?
I would be happy to. We had some really strong Lauren contenders, but the ultimate winner for this year goes to Sinead Aid,
who was an incredible Lauren. And Sinead Aid, Sinead.
Or it's Sinead Aid.
Oh, I love that. We'll be receiving a very special spooky gift box with various Angel and Buffyverse relics, in addition to that surprise Halloween poster. I love this. Okay, switching gears entirely.
Just a heads up that this episode of Angel deals with topics around incest and childhood sexual abuse. If you or anyone you love are a survivor of sexual assault, there are many resources available to you at RAIN, the USA's largest anti-sexual violence organization. RAIN operates the National Sexual Assault Hotline, which is 1-800-656-HOPE, H-O-P-E, in partnership with more than 1,000 local sexual assault service providers across the country, and operates the DOD Safe Helpline for the Department of Defense. Go to RAIN, that's RAIN with two N's, .org for more. Welcome back to Angel on Top, a podcast where we watch and discuss every episode of Angel one by one, spoiler free, and in tandem with Buffering the Vampire Slayer. I'm Laura Zach.
And I'm Brittany Ashley. And this week we're watching Untouched. Stick around until the end for an original poem written by us through the perspective of Angle.
Untouched was written by Mare Smith and was directed by Joss Whedon. It aired on October 17th, 2000.
This is the one where Angel attempts to help a girl with telekinetic powers before she falls into the hands of Wolfram and Hart.
It's also the one where Lila has the best sexual tension with Darla than she has had with anyone since Faith. To be honest, this one's a lot for me, and there's a lot to go through, and we're going to do it together, though.
So initially, before I watched this episode and I saw the title, it reminded me of the Veronica song, Untouched.
Beautiful.
Which was like a gay cornerstone. I feel so untouched right now, need you so much right now. Yeah, I don't really remember the words. I just remember,
made you feel.
Yeah. But then, obviously, as I watched the episode, I was like, oh, interesting choice for an episode about sexual abuse.
Right.
I mean, when you take into context how you see, like, Bethany play out these dynamics or these patterns into her adulthood and how she kind of sees sex as like a transactional thing that you like have to give to someone. It makes you think that even though she's being touched, it feels like she isn't. Or
it's interesting too that they chose to have the kind of monster of the week storyline for this episode revolve more explicitly around sexual assault and violation, while also in the larger arc of the storyline with Angel and Darla, there's obviously suggested rape and violation going on between the two of them. There's violation that's going to go on between Lila and Bethany. There's all sorts of forms of violating that kind of like lead up to this crescendo in this episode.
And an interesting thing is in German, this title of this Angel episode is called Out of Control, which felt also like a very interesting choice for a title as well, since at the very end, she obviously gains control of her powers. So this is the first time that Joss Whedon has directed an episode of Angel that he didn't write. And this is also the first episode that's written by Mare Smith, who remains on the show as one of their staff writers until season 4.
Welcome, a woman to the team.
Hell yeah. So we open with Lila from Wolfram and Hart doing some little after-hours snooping.
A little digging around what I assume to be Lindsay's office.
Yes. Yeah, which tells us one of two things is she stays at work very late and may not have a work-life balance, but also that she's kind of going rogue within the company. And I presume that since Darla is Lindsay's kind of like project, I presume that she's looking for something on Darla.
Oh, do you?
Yeah, because she's not alone.
Oh, no, she sure isn't.
Yeah, that sedated voice of an angel comes through, and it is Darla, who is also there. And Darla just tops Lila in her own workplace.
I did not know that these two characters on Angel invented sexual tension.
Yeah.
But wow, what a moment in history to behold.
Yeah, I mean, because this is also the first time we see Lila kind of in like a sub role, and Darla is just going in.
Also, Darla, I don't know if it's a like undead thing, but she doesn't really have much awareness of personal space and personal bubbles.
No.
It feels like she's speaking very closely to Lila. I feel like the camera always makes things seem farther away than they actually are. So in reality, these actresses are very close together when they're doing this scene. And it becomes clear that Lila wants intel from Darla about how she's able to control Angel when he's dreaming. And we learn that it is this purple powder.
Calynthia powder, which is in like a Cruel Intentions-esque vial that, yeah, it's a mystical drug that puts people into a restless sleep.
And Darla has this mini monologue about, you know, you learn everything about a person and their dreams, everything hidden. You can truly understand and control them when you have this information. So,
which I don't necessarily agree with, because remember, I've had dreams about being in the Air Force with Ashley Simpson. I've had so many dreams that make absolutely batshit nonsense.
Yes, it does seem that the thesis of this episode really relies on literal dreaming.
Mm-hmm.
But I do think, you know, all of our dreams, regardless of how wacky they may seem, at some point is connecting back to our intuitive brain. So it's not really about literally Ashley Simpson and the Air Force. It's about how Ashley Simpson and the Air Force makes you feel. And the emotion is
the
truth.
Wait a minute. So I like Ashley Simpson. What? Whoa. This is actually connecting for me.
Are you serious?
Because, okay, so my like last connection to heterosexuality was this guy that I had the biggest crush on all through middle school and high school. And towards the end of high school, he actually started to like me. Like, he was like the most popular hunk ever. And he liked me because we...
Lucky?
Yeah, I know, dude. Because we worked together at a pizza place and we were both delivery drivers. And he like thought I was so cool because I like liked Tool and I was just weird. And so he liked me and he like gave me acoustic guitar lessons. But I was also starting to figure out that I liked women. And he went off to the Air Force. And in that time, I had a huge crush on Ashley Simpson.
Okay.
Whoa.
Just call me Darla, but less rapey. You know what I mean?
Oh, wow. You know what? I also find it pretty interesting that, you know, there's obviously that stereotype that vampires don't sleep. Yet here we are with an entire plot line about Angel sleeping a whole shitload to the point where it's his detriment.
He also in this episode talks about how he doesn't breathe. And sure, that's a technicality, but I could not stop watching David Boreanaz's chest lift and him sigh many times throughout the scenes after that line. You know, lots of suspension of disbelief to make
Absolutely.
These worlds work. So we do cut to Angel waking up abruptly, and Cordelia and Wesley are having, they're in one of their tiffs, and they're having an argument laced with the same old Cordelia directed misogyny as we've been getting used to the last few episodes.
Yeah, like,
last episode was from Gunn.
Yeah, like, Cordelia, when's the last time you read a book? You're not as smart as me.
What did you study? Advanced bosoms?
Yeah.
You know, I kind
also,
of...
Also, yes.
Yeah, absolutely. Nothing wrong with it. But also, I expect a little bit of, like, a higher caliber of humor from Wesley at this point. And one thing I love about this scene is the source of their argument is that Cordelia wants to pay Gunn for his labor.
Yeah. Which, honestly, going into this, I didn't realize that that's where Cordy was going to stand, because
she's usually about getting her own green.
Well, yeah. Yeah. So, like, it's a double-edged sword, because in a way, I sometimes can't tell if she is trying to protect the money of Angel Investigations and if she's kind of stingy in that way. But since she also advocates for herself for money, it would make sense to now, since her and Gunn kind of have this connection, it would make sense that she would want people to be properly compensated. Yeah, Wesley was not my favorite in this episode. Like, he is basically saying that academic superiority is more important than emotional intelligence, which obviously, as we see him be so crass to Bethany at that one point, it's like, dude, what is wrong with you? Like, just because you read this thing, quote unquote, in a book does not mean that that is the way that you speak to someone with trauma. Yeah, he wasn't doing it for me this week.
No, not going to be on anyone's fuckwatch picks this week.
No.
Spoiler alert. And Angel also not doing it for me this episode, because he is maybe the saltiest we've ever seen him.
Oh,
listen,
I liked Angel in this episode.
Okay. I liked where he got to with Bethany, because as we know and as we've seen with Faith, he certainly, when he feels like he can personally relate to what the person's going through, like in navigating uncontrollable power and a darkness that they don't want to come out. Like, that's his bread and butter baby.
Yeah, he's sponsor daddy.
But I guess I more so mean in this opening. Like, he's coming in hot, trying to posture as, like, I'm the boss, even though I've been sleeping in till 10 p.m. every day. Like, imagine if you didn't work for me.
Yeah, well, I had bosses like this who they would show up drunk to work, and then they'd be like, go dust that thing, you bad employee. And it's like, you're projecting, Heather.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So Angel is a little bit Heather today.
Yes.
And Cordelia is like, you can't fire me, I'm Vision Girl. To which I say,
yeah, him dangling her livelihood in front of her was like, you're not her dad, Angel. But Angel comes out to Wes and Cordelia about his weird dreams in some way. He doesn't say that it's Darla, but he says he's sleeping more, but he's less rested. And it kind of makes me just be like, they probably just think you're depressed.
It becomes clear in this moment that both of them have been concerned about this.
100%.
Like, we've now seen a couple episodes in a row where they mention things about, like, oh, you slept in again, or it's nighttime or whatever. But this is them actually wanting to be like, okay, he's opening the door to have this conversation. Let's mm-hmm. take it. But then they're interrupted by Cordelia's vision. And she sees a girl in an alley who's so scared, and she's feeling her fear. And apparently all she has to say is
Hollywood and Wilcox
and an alley. And, well, I guess that's fair. Yeah. One intersection, four alleys. You probably got four alleys to pick from. And Angel takes off. And then right after he does, she says, oh no, he's going to be too late. Then we see the girl in question being chased down an alley by two dicks, implied they're about to assault her. One of them has a knife. And then she makes a little dumpster crush those boys.
Yeah, it's kind of like the classic misdirect that the whole Buffy series is founded on, and that the first scene in the pilot of Buffy with Darla. Yeah, it was kind of like the helpless girl gets run into an alley by bad guys. Then, oopsie, she turns out to be the one with more power.
She makes this strange acting choice right after the dumpster crushes them, where it's sort of like you can't tell if she's laughing or horrified. It's sort of like, The Bethany actress, like, made some choices. I mean, I don't want to, you know. It's hard to act, that's all I'll say. I did check out her IMDb, and she's done a lot of horror, so that makes sense, I guess.
Yeah, she also looked like, she kind of looked like a young Uma Thurman. She kind of looked like Uma Thurman and Ethan Hawke's kid.
I can see that.
Yeah.
So then we get the opening credits, and then we get the cops.
Oh, but, yeah. Angel's on the scene.
But no Kate.
I know, that's what I was... I was also curious about that. Like, is Kate just absolutely over this type of shit?
We also get season's two first appearance by actor Angel.
Well, Detective Angel.
Well, both, because he's acting detective and being a detective. Mash up.
Detective Angel.
And he pretends to be the top detective, whatever that term is.
Yeah.
And he's just winning the butch off.
Completely, yeah. He's able to deduce that the blood is actually not from the men, but it's from a woman who is in trouble. And then he leaves, and then the actual detective comes up, and he's like, what do we got here? And the cop is like, oh, no. I did it again. But now we're in this warehouse where Angel finds the woman.
Just chilling like around the corner from the crime.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah.
I think I'll just sit here and contemplate what I just did.
But she gets rightfully scared and makes a rebar go through his chest and is completely thrown off when he's not dead. And not to bring every single moment back to I Only Have Eyes for You, but it's kind of like how in that episode where everybody keeps dying because of the pattern of getting shot, when Angel is put in the dynamic, he's able to break that pattern because he's a vampire. So obviously he doesn't die by a bullet wound. And it's kind of like It's kind of the same with this. It's like she's used to killing people on accident with her telekinetic powers. And so she just assumed that she's killed another person and that she's a monster. But then this is like an emotionally restorative response to see that she's not dangerous to everyone. And that'll help her see that she doesn't always have to be dangerous. So Angel's kind of like the first step in that.
There's also a moment in the scene where Angel asks if she's new to L.A. and
just make a small talk.
Well, yeah, it also leads into, like, this town attracts loners, don't you think? And there's just, I don't know if you noticed, but there was a little bit of a move away from Angel referring to Cordelia and Wesley as his family in this one. Like, we ended season one where they really hit that hard. Like, this unit is a family now. Mm-hmm. And here he is. And I don't know if it's just a tactic in this moment to earn her trust and to show that he's similar to her, but he seems to be kind of like distancing himself from Cordelia and Wesley a little bit, and that could be one of the consequences of Darla's impact on him, because also later there's that moment when
she's like, this is a family business.
He's like, no, this, like, yeah, he specifically clarifies, this is not my family.
I mean, because also if you're like talking about like your familial kind of trauma in a way, it seems like his dad was kind of like emotionally abusive, or
Angel's dad?
Yeah.
Liam's oh yeah. Dad. It could just be that Angel recognized more intuitively what her root trauma was. And right. So it was a little bit more careful about his language around family.
Yeah. Like to someone who is feeling alone and without family or without roots, being like, I have this family that I love so much. I'm sure it wouldn't have been the most correct approach.
Yeah. And, you know, she is street savvy, though, and is not going to go anywhere with him. And so instead, he just gives her his business card and then has this really powerful line of, I won't hurt you. And then most importantly, you can't hurt me.
What a beautiful.
You need that.
What a beautiful way to describe a relationship, like a secure relationship.
Secure attachment.
Yeah. But then, of course, as she leaves, he collapses because, yeah. A fucking bar went through him, and daddy is tie-tie.
And then Bethany is staying with a friend. OMG, it's Lila in a white tank top. That's the friend she's staying with. I'm fine.
And Lila was like, sorry, I couldn't go to the club with you. I had to fold this laundry.
Domestic Lila.
Okay. So we need to talk about the relationship that they set up between Lila and Bethany.
Oh, we do. Because, you know, Laura is picturing a college tour where you could sit in an auditorium and just like watch Lila do a TED talk about Wolferman Hart, and sign me up.
It's actually high school, I think.
High school, a school tour.
Okay, so like imagine being one of Bethany's friends and being like, hey, when you go to LA, who are you staying with again? And her being like, you know that woman 15 to 20 years older than me that works at that law firm that visited our school that one time and spoke there? Maybe it's her hometown. It was kind of unclear. Anyway, she approached me for unknown reasons after her talk, and then we made a blood oath, and then we continue to stay in touch either through snail mail or phone calls. Anyway, see you in a week. This isn't weird at all. Bye.
This is a perfectly normal decision.
Yeah. Yeah, with that woman who toured my high school for whatever fucking reason.
My reaction to it really reveals my own origin stories with older people, which we and teacher figures, which we won't go into in depth, but
we can.
No, it's all right. But I do think it's interesting that I more immediately understood why Bethany would want that, where you went to the whole like, what the F? You know,
yeah. I mean, did I try to get the approval of some of my teachers? 100%. However, What a weird relationship that they set up. Unless they're trying to show us that Wolferman Hart literally tries to like poach people.
I think that is
that are like that are alone and have supernatural powers, and this is how they like get their quote unquote assassins.
It's a type of predatory behavior of sniffing out who is going to be the most isolated, the most vulnerable to it, and then also combined with someone who's powerful that they can use for their own purposes.
Right. So Angel wants Wes and Cordelia to find out more about this girl. And there was a really fun Buffy episode throwback when Angel was like, do you know how hard it is to think with a rebar through your torso? And Cordelia is like, yeah, I do. Because remember when she discovered that Xander was cheating on her with Willow and they were in that like warehouse, her and Oz. And then she fell through the stairs and then she got rebar through her torso.
I knew you were going to know the exact moment because I deduced from this moment that like it had happened to her and Buffy, but it didn't leap to mind. I was like, Brittany will know.
Of course.
Also, in this moment when they're patching up a hunky shirtless angel, the moment I found most disturbing is when he refers to Ohio as the Northeast.
Yeah, that's the Midwest, buddy.
Yeah, not even close. Sure, it's north and east of L.A., but anyway, we move on. We really get the echoes of Faith storyline here because he uses language like she needs help, she's out of control, she's just lost. And
yeah, Bethany would be Faith if she like didn't get any help at all, like if she just continued on like a path of this for a very long time.
Right, which is another reason Wolfram and Hart, you know, they can sense that. And they're like, we need to channel this for our purposes. Because she's also perfectly suited to, you know, be down to kill some men.
Totally.
Yeah. So Gunn shows up and is like, you call, I come. Ready for battle. He's got a hell of a new axe.
Yeah, it's the first appearance of his hubcap axe.
Oh.
Yeah. And he said, I thought I might get the chance to stick it in someone tonight. And Cordelia says, all men are alike. But and honestly, like, not to be too shippy, but I do think that Cordelia and Gunn have chemistry, or I just confuse mutual respect for chemistry.
Yeah, or you confuse negging that turns into mutual respect for chemistry.
Oh, I'm such a little child at heart.
So it's very clear that Angel is hoping Gunn will do his legwork, which immediately I think this positions the audience to be like, if they weren't already, Team Cordelia. Like, we get immediately, pay him. And Angel's just like, yeah, you all do this for me. I'm going to go back to bed. He's been up for like
3 hours.
Yeah. And then in a very salty way is like, Cordelia, find the girl. Just, I think this is what I mean. I was just like, sure, he has the empathy for Bethany. But it's sort of like when someone is celebrated for being a genius in this one very specific arena, but then is garbage to everyone around them and in their inner world. It's like, I don't care if they're a genius.
Yeah, he's not being the most kind to Cordelia, even though later on, she's not even the employee that like
fucks things up.
Yes, completely. And then we match cut to Bethany sleeping.
Bethany.
What did I say?
Bethany.
Bethany. And she's whimpering in her sleep. We see some of the furniture shaking, and it's like a flashback of her and presumably her father. And Lila, like, sneaks into her room, and Bethany accidentally flings a lamp at Lila. And Bethany is obviously, like, terrified that she did this, and so she's leaving. She's fleeing, and Lila's like, no, I wanted to control your mind.
But also the implication is that Bethany had used the powder on her the night before.
Yeah, which is why she's like so deep into a sleep and getting like having these images that presumably she hasn't had in a while.
Also, the actor that played the dad looked a little bit like Coach Taylor, which is not a juxtaposition I ever wanted.
Well, do you know who it is?
Who?
It is the actor... Gareth Williams, who you might remember as Joey Potter's dad on Dawson's Creek.
No.
Yeah, he is the dad who is like in and out
absentee.
Of jail.
Yeah.
And that's why Joey's mom died and her dad is in jail. And so he's kind of also like the root of some.
Anytime
some
that Dawson's
her.
Creek can come up, it's a good day.
Anytime Joey Potter can come up.
Oh, that is
it's
real.
It's a good day.
And then we get a scene of Darla and Angel while he's sleeping. And it was interesting, this choice to show her fully dressed beside him while they're clearly making out in the dream. So I think there was this little bit of maybe trying to show that, like, she doesn't actually literally always do the things that are happening in the dream. So maybe she hasn't had sex with him while he's been asleep.
Well, this scene is when they're about to kill the gypsy. So this is the same scene from 5x5. This is like the root of when he gets cursed by the gypsies, because I think like later in this episode, you'll see like the reveal of the gypsy. But yeah, this is like right before they kind of like drain her in this really fucked up sexual way. But Bethany out of options on where to stay now because her old high school speaker person is in disarray, comes to Angel. And she's here because she knew that she'd be safe and that they would be safe too. And similar to Angel, Bethany is also Ty-Ty.
Yeah, and you want to know who else is Ty-Ty? Cordelia and Wesley, because they have been working the entire time that Angel's been snoozing.
Yeah.
And I just want to give a shout out to the head hairstylist of Angel Season 2, Diana Acree, for Cordelia's beautiful blowout. That's all.
Brava, Diana. Brava.
And this is the moment where she asks, where Bethany asks, is this a family business? And Angel quickly corrects, no, just friends. Cordelia explains he helps people with problems. And you can tell that Cordelia right away is a little put off by Bethany.
And the reasoning for it later is so strange. When Cordelia tells Wesley, I got a vibe from Bethany, a sexual vibe.
Yeah, I did not like the way they framed it.
Well, the way that they came to these conclusions was
especially
really strange.
I felt like what Mare was and the creators were trying to do was setting up some sort of female intuition, yeah, where like maybe Cordelia was going to pick up more quickly on some sort of past trauma in this woman than Wesley and Angel would. I mean, Angel obviously would be able to for his own reasons. But yeah, the way she framed it later felt very odd.
Completely.
And it didn't feel like like coming from a compassionate place. It felt a little bit more judgy initially.
Mm-hmm.
But she's really coming from a place of wanting to protect Angel and wanting to make sure that like they're not inviting in a client who's ultimately going to put them
right
at risk.
I mean, yeah, they last season they had that actress woman who kind of did a similar, like, who they're afraid of that repeating itself and Angel turning into Angelus again. Because
well, and
also,
Faith put them all at risk as well.
Yeah. So we also learned that Wolfram and Hart manufactured this Allie scenario, and it's because they wanted to train her as an assassin. And this kind of reminded me of that Buffy episode Helpless, where the Watchers Council tests her and renders her less powerful. But yeah, like one of the most disturbing things about this is that Lila, like obviously having some knowledge of the fact that Bethany's dad was sexually abusing her, because I presume she like also went to Lila's house and like had dinner with her family or something and saw what was going on. She manufactured a scenario where two men would try to sexually assault her, which is like, who is behind this high school speaker program that allowed Lila into their assembly? And this reminded me.
Public schools, you know, are very under budget these days.
Did I ever tell you about the time in third grade?
Where is this going?
Where we had an assembly and were told that this deaf and blind woman named Helen Keller wanted to talk to us?
No.
So that happened in third grade. We're all like, kindergartners through fourth grade were like put in this assembly and they introduced us to Helen Keller, who is...
So it was a performance. It was like a play.
We were told...
This was literally...
That this was a woman named Helen Keller who was deaf and blind, and they wanted to show us our bias against people with disabilities, but the actor would try to jump scare the kids to show us how wrong we were, that we were afraid of her. And then at the very end...
What do you mean jump scare? Like right when you'd trust her, she'd be like... Ah.
So we were all like sitting in rows and she would like weave through the rows but like wobble around and like...
Oh my...
And then she would try it and then she would like grab onto a kid's arm to be like trying to catch herself. But obviously this actor was not deaf or blind. It was chaotic.
Wow, that's something that sticks with you, obviously.
Obviously. But yeah, it really makes you think who's behind all these assemblies.
How old would you say you were when you reflected on that memory and realized the depths of the dynamics going on? Because like I imagine that as a third grader, you took it a little bit more at face value. Or
I took
even
it as
then,
truth. Yeah, yeah, like I didn't understand that this was an actor. And so I took it as truth.
Also, that just sets these kids up to look like little idiots when, like, in eighth grade, they're like, oh, yeah, yeah.
I'm
Helen Keller.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow. The
layers. I think we also had Harriet Tubman come in.
Oh, my.
Equally confusing.
Well, this is what I'm saying. Public school, you know, funding, maybe Wolfram and Hart. It's one of those things like, hey, you know what? You don't even have to pay us to come talk.
Yeah.
We have this program. We're going to pay you. Yeah. We're going to donate, you know, some school supplies, all with the W&H logo on them. And we're going to come and bring these inspiring speakers.
Yeah. But anyhow, Bethany calls Lila while Lila is standing there with Holland. And Bethany reveals that she's staying with Angel.
Uh-oh. Never what Lila wants to hear.
As a podcast network, our first priority has always been audio and the stories we're able to share with you. But we also sell merch. And organizing that was made both possible and easy with Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell and grow at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. They have an all-in-one e-commerce platform and in-person POS system, so wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. With the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms, Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers. Shopify has allowed us to share something tangible with the podcast community we've built here, selling our beanies, sweatshirts, and mugs to fans of our shows without taking up too much time from all the other work we do to bring you even more great content. And it's not just us. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. Shopify is also the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/realm, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/REALM now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/realm.
Hey there, this is Justin Bartha. I made a funny new podcast, King of the Egg Cream. It has the greatest cast in the history of podcasts with actors like Louis Black.
I'm torn by my feelings for two women.
Bobby Cannavale.
You can eat it. Or if someone hits you, you can put it on your cut.
Melanie Lynskey.
I wonder what these marvelous things are that look just like boiled chicken feet.
Jason Ritter.
I can break things and pick locks and kill people.
Michael Stuhlbarg.
The whole point is to inspire people that they should make themselves better.
Ari Grainer.
No, don't whet its appetite. What are you, an idiot?
Me, Justin Bartha.
That's not just any egg cream, that's a Lemke's special.
And all narrated by the hilarious Richard Kind.
This is the story of Harry Dalowitz and how he rose from nothing to become New York's King of the Egg Cream.
So if you like funny true stories, come listen to King of the Egg Cream, available wherever you get your podcasts.
So Bethany and Angel are kind of starting their first, like, it's like the equivalent of like a Tai Chi session that Buffy tried to do with Angel when he came back from hell to, like, you know, ground him and calm him. Angel's doing a similar thing, but he kind of makes, I can't tell if it was like an intentional misstep or not, that he wanted to see that if she's using her telekinesis for kind of like her own selfish reasons or if it's something she truly can't control. And we learn that it's something that, you know, she can't control. And then Wesley comes in, blows up the whole thing by saying we shouldn't be helping her. We should help people who need it, not helping someone with impulse control issues. It made me think that maybe he's still scarred from the faith thing. But also, he later reveals that it was like his genius plan to uncover if she had childhood trauma.
Yeah, that's how I took it. It felt like he was trying a new tactic because Angel's wasn't really working. But also, Angel had been working with her for like 3 minutes.
Yeah.
Give him a second, yeah. Wesley.
And then he's like, we should send you home to your father. And then there's like this huge emotionally distressed telekinetic reaction. And she flings Angel into the sunlight where he roasts a little bit.
And then we get like the other wild logic of Wesley explaining, insane, like, listen, Cordelia said she felt a sexual vibe. Bethany literally said the words family business when she walked in here. Therefore, dad stuff.
Yeah.
Like, you know,
he connected A to D completely. Oh, he connected like A to F. Wait, he connected like...
I'm keeping this in.
He connected like A to G.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But I mean, to be fair, he did also add that usually a psychic ability comes from major trauma, which also I think makes sense when we talk about empaths that can come from a place of trauma or a place of having to self-protect, because that requires you to become hyper-vigilant and hyper-aware of your environment and the people around you and the sort of micro shifts that happen in someone's personality to flag that something worse may be coming. So I think whenever there's someone who has had to grow up vigilant for their own safety, they're going to be super aware and anticipatory of other people around them.
Right. Or if you just think about any origin story of any superhero or supervillain, it always comes from some sort of childhood trauma. Like, I always just presumed that I would be a superhero because my mom died when I was young. Not the case. Not the case.
I like how I was trying to like relate the source to the actual real life thing. You're like, yeah, and also superheroes. You know, superheroes. But yeah, it all comes from the same place as, yeah.
And Angel tells Wesley to go home after this, which honestly, good. He needs like sensitivity training.
And a nap.
Yeah. And then he's like, and then Angel does say, it helps that we know. But Bethany, that is like a lawsuit. Like, sue Angel Investigations for distress and then sue your school for allowing Lila to speak at it.
And then sue your dad. Well, and then, yeah, and then just sue your dad, put your dad in jail.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, not that the onus of responsibility is on the victim, right. But wow, she has been wronged many times over and continues to be.
So then we see like a very quick scene of Angel talking Bethany down. I thought Bethany was going to leave. She doesn't. She just goes up to the attic. But then it's like a really quick cut to Angel sleeping and having his like gypsy snuff dream again. And Bethany ends up coming into Angel's room. And Angel, you know, as we saw in the last episode where he kind of like forgets what is reality and what is dream, when Wesley comes in and he like starts to strangle Wesley naked, Angel wakes up and mistakes Bethany for Darla. And then Bethany makes a comment about Angel's vamp dick.
What?
She makes a comment about his boner. When she says...
Oh, the covers are rumpled.
Yeah.
Seems like a happy dream, or maybe the covers are rumpled. Yeah, this scene was incredibly uncomfortable.
Yes.
And, you know, as you mentioned, her using sex as transactional. It's not even here like she expects anything from it. I think she just expects this is what he expects.
Right. Well, yeah, kind of similarly to, I think it was the pilot of Angel, where Angel like does this deed for this woman
and she's
like, okay, well, I guess we have sex now. And it's just showing like the sad reality of the way that women are conditioned to give sex away for something else. Like, you know, when you have dinner with a guy and he pays, you presume that you have to have you have to give him sex. It was really sad because you see that it's not something that she wants at all. She's just been conditioned to believe that this is something that you should do. Or I thought that the actor did a really good job of showing her like distance from it while trying to act as if it's something that she wants, when you can see that it really isn't.
And when he pushes back and asks, you know, what she wants, basically, or if it's what she wants, she says, who cares if I love it? I'm like the chambermaid. I just leave when a guy's on me. You know, like basically she describes disassociating.
Yeah. And it made me wonder if she's kind of like repeating the same abuse, but under the guise of her having control over it. Because then it makes it feel like maybe she did have some control over it, because the notion of not having control over horrible things that have happened to you is sometimes even harder to accept than the thing in the first place. It's like, is there anything that I could have done to change it? And so she, in a way, by her being the instigator, she's able to be in quote-unquote control.
And at the end of the scene, she's questioning whether Angel's qualified to help her. And so I think in some ways she is balking against his rejection of her as something to indicate that he's not going to be strong enough to do what she needs, whereas really it's indicating like he is the one, because he falls outside of this pattern,
right,
that like she's become accustomed to because of her abuse.
Yeah, and little does she know that Angel is the last straight guy in Los Angeles who will have sex tonight, because it means that the world could end.
That's real. And as she leaves, Darla comes from the shadows and sort of like, who the fuck is that?
Yeah, exactly. And Holland wants Lila to get Bethany out of the picture.
Well, Holland wants Lila to get Bethany out of Angel's.
He said that line,
get her out, not just for the sake of the big picture, but for your sake. So like he still thinks there's a chance that they could use Bethany for their purposes.
I read that as like
killer.
Yeah. But Bethany and Angel are having progress. Angel's trying to help Bethany control her power. And this is around the time where Angel has to leave to go meet Gunn in Brentwood, which is also insanely far from downtown. So he will not be back soon, like he says. But he's like, hey, Bethany and Cordelia, why don't you guys go shopping? Which Bethany does look psyched for. Like, she looks excited to spend time with Cordelia.
Yeah, and I'm glad this was a turn that I was happy about, because I was a little bit nervous at the beginning of when Cordelia and Bethany first meet each other that this was going to be a classic, like, the two women have to have tension with each other. Like,
you're right.
So I was glad that it turned a little bit more into solidarity, even though there was the weird sexual vibes comment.
Yeah, and even though Bethany was like, are you an angel? And Cordelia was like, no.
No.
So Gunn and Angel are in the apartment of the sexual assaulty guys, and Gunn is pretty hilarious in this scene, and he's making fun of this quote unquote ugly ass living room set, and he says some people shouldn't have money, and that is a perfect segue for Angel to bring up money, which is obviously the idea of paying Gunn has been something that he, I guess, hasn't really wanted to do, or he thinks that Gunn will be too proud to accept money.
Or that was Wesley's theory. I don't know what Angel's excuse is.
Then Gunn's response is just, you want to pay me? Cool. Like, yeah. But then Angel does the perfect 90s thing or early 2000s thing, which is to go to someone's phone and hit redial.
Oh.
And it's Will Furman Hard, baby.
Star 6ix9ine, baby.
Yes.
Speaking of Star 6ix9ine. Is it time?
Oh, yeah. Flirting, understanding, consent, and kissing. Flirting, understanding, consent, and kissing.
Fuck watch. All right, welcome to Fuck Watch.
This is a toughie.
Yeah, not an episode that really I wanted to apply this exercise to, but
yeah, there was not an emotionally healthy person in the bunch.
No, not at all.
The timing was not right.
No. I'm into enthusiastic consent, and there was
zero of that.
None to be found. So mind if I go first?
Please.
So my pick this week is to abstain, because I think more than ever it's important to remember and to remind each other and ourselves it's okay to say no.
Yeah, I went a different route, which is I chose Gunn's hubcap axe. It was truly the only thing that felt like a possible partner. And it's just something I could enjoy on my own. It was new. It was shiny. It was fun. And
I think, you know, we don't need to linger today on this. No. All right, moving on.
We do
Thanks,
not have
everyone.
To be the cranberries.
No. Flirting, understanding, consent, and kissing. Flirting, understanding, consent, and kissing. Fuck watch. In the scene with Cordelia and Bethany, despite what I said about, you know, being glad that they didn't play up the woman infighting thing, Cordelia is very honest with her. She's very like, I think you're dangerous. Like, I'm going to have some real talk with you right now. I'm going to say what the other guys are not going to say. And she shares with her that she has felt her feelings, that she felt how scared
right,
she
like
was.
Empathically.
Cordelia knows that Bethany truly was in fear of her life in the moment that she killed those men. Like, she didn't kill that. She truly killed them out of self-defense. It wasn't like something she wanted to do. But she also recognizes that there's something chaotic about Bethany, where Bethany doesn't have full control over what she can do. And Cordelia is incredibly protective of her people. You know, she also identifies like, yeah, you say you don't have control, but at some point in that alleyway, a decision was made and you made that decision. And I don't want the same thing to happen to my friends. I also wonder if Cordelia Chase in this episode of Angel, so many things being invented in this episode, if Cordelia Chase invented using the phrase, and I can't stress this enough, in a humorous way, because she says, I don't want the same things to happen to my friends, and I can't stress this enough, me.
Yeah.
Like, she was Twitter before Twitter was a thing.
She really was.
And Bethany says she gets it. And it feels like there's genuinely a mutual respect being established here between them. And just as, you know, a beat after that is established, Bethany gets some
tranquilized
and pulled away from Cordelia by a couple of strange men and pulled into a van.
Yeah, but not before Cordelia throws hot coffee. And
oh, yeah,
these
she fights.
Guys.
She fights.
She is definitely kick-ass in this moment. And Cordelia does, like, whisk her away for a moment. But then, yeah, the guys get away with Bethany. But right in time, Angel and Gunn fling around in the convertible, and she's like, follow that van. I have no idea how Angel and Gunn found her,
but I'm into this moment, so I'm just gonna let it be. But also, there was that funny moment where previously in their heart to heart, Cordelia had said, like, you squashed those guys, and I don't, like, basically saying, I don't want you to squash my friends. And then as Bethany's taken away in the van, Cordelia's running after going, Bethany, you can squash those guys.
Yeah.
And then we get this incredible,
like, Fast and the Furious one shit.
Angel balancing on the hood of his own car with gun driving.
Yeah. And then he gets into the van. He throws the guys out of the van. He saves Bethany. And it fucking rocked.
Yeah, it did. And then we get to see a makeup-free, gorgeous Lila, but she has a bruise.
Yeah, and she's like, we got to pull the trigger. Like, we got to bring in the big guns. And Angel and Bethany are up in the, you know, the penthouse or whatever, the attic of the hotel. And Angel's telling Bethany how bad Lila is. And Bethany is having this, like, telekinetic freak out. She's shutting all the windows and doors, and he's like, you have the power, control it. And Angel calms her down.
The way you keep doing this voice, it reminds me of the Goonies. Hey, you guys! It's like, you have the power!
Yeah, this is my voice. He calms her down for now until her fucking dad shows up and all the windows go a boom.
You want to know what the dad says when he gets there? That's my daughter!
Yeah.
Ever heard of a daughter?
Yeah.
Oof. This takes on a very dark dad dimension.
Yeah. And he calls her a rabbit, which under the context of assuming sexual abuse is incredibly creepy. And Bethany is freaking out. She shoots a nail through Cordy's arm. The drywall is collapsing, which also doesn't say much for the construction of the building. And her dad is trying to get her to come home. But we obviously know that Lila hired him specifically to do this. And Bethany controls herself for a moment and then lifts her dad in the air, strangling him. And Angel, at first, I thought she was like, because he was like, you know what to do. And I thought he was saying, kill your dad.
Me too.
But then she throws him out the window, yet stops him right before he hits the pavement. And at first, I thought that she was showing him mercy. But then I realized that she's showing that she's fully in control now. Like, she is in control whether he lives or dies. It is the exact opposite dynamic of when she was a child and he could control whatever she was doing.
And therefore, he's never going to touch her or anyone else again.
Yeah, because she could fucking kill him. And I was honestly pretty shocked that Bethany went back to Lila's to grab her stuff. But then all I also realized it was a way to exert her own, like to show that she has this power that she can control now. And so Lila better not fuck with her again. And I love the line, "You gotta learn to lose, sweetie." Yeah, like Angel and Bethany going to get her stuff from Lila's. And Lila's like, "You know you're not invited in here." And Angel's just like outside the door.
He is he's feeling pretty high on himself.
He is a messy bitch who loves drama in this moment.
Absolutely.
And Bethany and Angel are united front. Angel has won. But however, as they leave, he's unaware that Lila is in control of him in a way because she has control of Darla. It's all about like who has control and who has power.
Yeah, and Angel says, like, "Looks like you're going to have to find someone else's brain to play with." And Lila says, "We have someone in mind." And she says sweet dreams a second time this episode, this time about Angel. And I have a feeling that this Darla storyline is about to come to a head. But I do want to go back real quick to that moment where Angel's encouraging Bethany. So I don't know that I'm completely clear that he didn't mean kill him. Because I mean, I agree that what she ended up doing was more powerful, but when Angel says finish it.
Yeah, I got like Mortal Kombat vibes.
Finish him, which I felt like a big choice for Angel in the moment because he rarely will ever justify killing a mortal, human, yeah. if at all. But you feel like from the beginning he knew she was going to exercise the restraint?
Hard to say.
Yeah.
Hard to say.
I mean, I like how it's vague.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Thank you for listening to this episode of Angel on Top. I'm Laura Zach.
And I'm Brittany Ashley. And again, if you need to talk to someone about your sexual assault or on behalf of someone you love, U.S. residents can call RAIN's National Sexual Assault Hotline at 1-800-656-HOPE. To be connected with more than 1,000 local sexual assault service providers across the country. Go to RAIN.org to find more.
You can follow Angel on Top on Instagram and Twitter at @AngelOnTopCast. And you can email us at AngelOnTopPodcast, all one word, @gmail.com.
And now, please enjoy the poem for Untouched from Angel's point of view. Untouched. Waking up from another sweet slumber to tame the bickering personnel. But if we start paying gun, can we afford this luxurious hotel? I come clean about my chronic dozing. I'm sleeping more, but rested much less. I refuse to tell anyone about Dream Darla. I'll just let them assume I'm depressed. Post-Courty vision, I'm on the scene. I deduce that a woman's in peril. But the attacked becomes the attacker. I hope that rebar she threw was sterile. My helping the helpless thesis extends to those with telekinesis. Bethany shows up reluctant and nervous. Out of options, she seeks our service. The first lesson to stop violent outbreaks helps her gain control over her strength. Soon the tutorial turns deadly. For that, I can thank dear Wesley. Though I abhor his harsh approach, Wes's theory seems to hold weight. While fantasizing about days past, Bethany finds me in an untamed state. Her transactional view of sex, no doubt, troubles me to no end. A comforting hug would be appropriate, but I'll need a minute before I can leave this bed. When inspecting a Salter's abode, its lack of style can be picked apart. But a voicemail message tells harrowing truth. The attack was orchestrated by Wolfram and Hart. Why did I send Bethany to the Glendale Galleria with only the protection from our dear Cordelia? From convertible hood to van, I'm flying. In the nick of time, I retrieve our client. Copacetic for now, I console her until her dad shows up unannounced. Her rage intensifies. There goes my windows. I thought I hated my dad, but this is pronounced. By not killing him, was that mercy or her way of claiming control? Against Lila, we've won for now. But trauma follows us like a shadow.
Nice. I like shadow.
Yeah.
Nowadays, trends and news cycles change faster than we can blink. But there are some things that withstand the test of time. And if you're looking for a connection to something timeless, and maybe also a glimpse of life at a slower pace, I believe everyone can relate to the very human experiences explored in Jane Austen's novels. And that's where I come in. My name is Alison Larkin. I'm a writer, comedian, and narrator and host of The Jane Austen Podcast with Alison Larkin. I spent a lot of my childhood in the part of England where Jane Austen lived and wrote, and now that I live in the States, nothing gives me a sense of homecoming quite like narrating her books. On this show, you'll listen to award-winning narration. I'll give myself a pat on the back for that, as well as conversations with actors, writers, and other fascinating people who all share a passionate love for Jane Austen. So please, join me as we embark on a wonderful journey through Jane Austen's work. Be sure to listen and subscribe to The Jane Austen Podcast with Alison Larkin, wherever you get your podcasts.